space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its five-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life, a new civilization, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Greetings, salutations, and welcome to Retrek. I'm Captain Jim, and with me, of course, Sir Admiral Elliot.
Hi there.
And Dr. Squee.
Dragon!
And we're here for week two of our Prodigy coverage, which is actually episodes 3 and 4, which I noticed this week Netflix have updated it, and we've actually got episode titles now.
I noticed that as well this morning while I was busy doing the thumbnail.
So well done, Netflix. Yeah. It's not just episode 3 and 4. It's Who Saves the Saviors and Temporal Mechanics 101.
Can I also just check with you guys? Just like, obviously, we'll go. We're just covering the episodes for them. We're not going to like spoil anything. But just in case I slip, have you guys seen all the rest?
I'm only up to number 6.
Sweet.
I'm up to 8.
I decided how I'm doing it. Like, I've actually watched these like, I think, 3 times this week. So how I'm watching it, I'm actually getting loads and loads and loads of viewing in on all of them.
Which is good for the demographics, yeah. I'll be honest, I've just not had time. We've had an election, we've got a football tournament.
I've bought a house.
Yeah, we've sold an house.
we've had a mental busy week.
Yeah, so I only just really started binging it yesterday, and it was one of them where I was like, right, I'll rewatch these two for doing the podcast, and I was like, I'll just watch the next couple. Yeah. Ooh, that ended on a cliffhanger. I'll watch the next one. Oh, another cliffhanger, right. And then I had to stop myself when it got to about midnight. I was like, no.
It's actually for next week, so I've got a really nice, interesting fact for next week.
Ooh. Well, we look forward to that next week. There's a hook for the audience. They'll be tuning in now.
I was kind of like staying up late watching it. I was just so hooked when I was watching it through. But yeah, to get to watch it back for this, it like means that at bare minimum, Retrek, each three of us will have watched it twice. So
people have watched them all at least 3 times.
Multiple watches.
Yeah, we're doing our bit. Definitely. Are you doing yours?
Yeah.
And Jim, you mentioned the election there. So the first Retrek under a Labour government.
Yes, indeed. And that's why you can tell we're all so much happier.
It's why I can afford the lights on now. I can afford electricity again.
Can I just say a quick funny story? Because like my hair's gone blue, but because I had red hair dyeing before, it was meant to go green. So I was like, oh, fucking hell, I'm the only person who's gone from red to blue in this country last week.
Very true. And Labour government got in on Friday. Elliot bought an house on Monday. That's how quickly they've turned round the prospects of getting on the housing ladder.
Government.
Absolutely not. Anyway, let's crack on with the episodes then. So first of all, Who Saves the Saviors? And it picks us up straight away after they've stolen the Infinity. And they're in a wormhole, but they actually call it a time hole, which I feel like is a reference to Red Dwarf, the episode backwards where they've got Crichton's doing his orienteering. He's like, what's that? It's a time hole. It's not a time hole.
Because it's taking them through time as opposed to through space. And, well, it's doing both.
Well, that's but not I the like only Red that. Dwarf reference in this.
Oh.
It's cutting ahead, but Jenkum's hand. You remember in, might be the same episode that you're talking, it's the one where Terraform, is it? It's Rim's. Sorry,
yeah, Terraform. Crichton's
stuck underneath the thing, so he unscrews his hand, makes a little version of himself with an eyeball.
Yeah.
And I thought Jenkum's hand looked a lot like that, because
I didn't even notice
the other Red Dwarf kind of esque sort of thing. So maybe we've got some Red Dwarf fans on the writing crew. I wouldn't be surprised.
As there should be as well. There should be Red Dwarf fans in every walk of life.
You'd like to think that when you're working on a sci-fi show, you will enjoy sci-fi, and if you've got anything about you, you'd have quite a large spectrum of things that you like watching. It's like I really hate when you bump into these people who go, I watch Star Wars, but I like Star Wars, don't like Star Trek. Or I like Star Trek, I don't like Star Wars. It's like, no, they're both really good in their own separate ways.
Yeah, it's people always want to be territorial about stuff like supporting football teams. It's like, it doesn't work like that with entertainment. You can watch as much of it as you want. It's great.
Yeah, if you're only watching like one show, and especially like for a long time, if you only watch Star Wars, you were very limited on what you could actually watch in a week.
Yeah, right. You had your three films.
You had three movies.
Some books.
There's three movies for the best part of 20 years. Then for the next 30 odd years, there was six movies.
Yeah. And yeah, there was some spin-off fiction, but they didn't really start in earnest until probably the early 90s, late 80s, early 90s. Anyway,
it's always a bizarre one that got me that I like, I watch Star Wars, but I'm not Star Trek. It's like, what? So you only watch three movies?
Yeah, ever. Yeah. And so Dal wants to save Chakotay because he saved them, which, okay, I'll buy that that works as motivation within the story for someone who doesn't know Chakotay. But trust me, if you knew him, you would not want to save him.
I was off to say, like Dal is still young and impressionable, so he's not learned everything. He's still only a trainee cadet, so he won't have actually, he's probably not even read up on what a shithead Chakotay is.
Yeah, and don't forget, like, the reports of Chakotay will all be written by Janeway, and we know she's a bit sweet on him, so...
Well, I think she's mellowed towards him, but she had the opportunity to be sweet on him and chose a monkey.
This is true. This is true.
and also Lizard Paris, of course.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's slightly different is the lizard one, but... She was in a one-on-one situation with him, only two of them on the planet forever, and she chose to get with a monkey instead.
I'm still waiting for your monkey Janeway fan fiction. I'm still waiting for it.
Oh, it'll be out there, don't you worry. It'll be there if you want to find it. Meanwhile, we've got Horsensia back on, I always forget the name of the planet, but Gwyn's planet. And, yeah, she basically is trying to muster the troops to get rid of Gwyn because she doesn't want Gwyn doing anything. But her dad actually sticks up for her in this instance, and we're seeing the nicer John Noble.
I was about to say, we're seeing the nice Diviner, aren't we? Not Diviner,
It was the Diviner, but
I'm just so glad they have... They don't seem to be going down the route of kind of him, but like, oh, but what was my other self like? Was he evil? Maybe I'll be. I'm so glad they're still sticking
just
with him.
Seems... Being good.
Yeah, it's nice.
Yeah, without the changes to the timeline, he just seems a nice guy.
Yeah, it's like obviously events on his planet during the Civil War is what made him what he was. It wasn't like that. He's a victim of circumstance.
Yeah, and it just, I think it creates such a nice dark difference between him and the other person who traveled back with him, the woman.
Horsensia.
I think it's nice because you get to see, like, right, there is a difference between someone who is just so embittered and just doesn't seem capable of change when they see stuff in front, whereas he, down that path.
It possibly also explains Gwen's nice side, that she's actually genetically from a nice, nice bloke.
So yeah,
he isn't out and out evil from the start. He's a victim of circumstance. So Gwen has got that I'm genetically from a really nice bloke.
Yeah, there was even some shades of it in the first series, even though he was out and out being, you know, doing bad things. There were some moments where he was actually being really sweet, where he actually it showed that he did actually care for her.
Yeah, it was always clear that he cared for her, and it's nice to explore this other facet of the character. And it must be great for the, you know, John Noble as an actor to do it as well. He's still playing the same character, but he made different decisions, or he hasn't been faced with those decisions to make yet.
Well, to be fair, we've seen that from John Noble when he did Fringe.
Yes, to be fair, Fringe was that's good.
Fringe that's where I first discovered him myself. I've since seen him in earlier stuff, but yeah.
Fringe was an amazing series. If you haven't watched Fringe, go back and rewatch it after you finish watching us tonight.
It's one Fringe of the great... is one that's strangely absent on most of the streaming services. Yeah. It's hard to find his Fringe, which is a bit annoying.
It's one of the few series where you've got the kind of like wise sage who's on acid candy sticks, like for the whole thing.
And I like the cow. What were the cow's name?
I can't remember.
I forgot. June or something, or Jean. Anyway, doesn't matter. Answers on a postcard. What was the cow called in Fringe? They did.
Yeah.
Was it his last acting role? No, he said it was, but he was fibbing because he turned up in Star Trek Into Darkness. So there we go.
Oh, yeah.
So, like all good Star Trek planets, we've got a ritualistic combat.
Yeah.
But this time it's called the Valura.
Now, don't you find this planet quite odd? Because we've got John Noble's character is playing is an astronomer. Mm-hmm. So it's looking out at the stars and everything. And we can tell that they're actually quite advanced technologically. They've got very advanced robots, etc.
Yeah.
But they've never made any effort to leave the surface of the planet.
No, that's a fair point. Maybe it's one of them planets where it's quite distant, so you'd have to have invented warp drive, not just
light speed. Yeah, but no radio telescopes or anything picking up signals.
It's interesting.
It did seem that when the Federation sort of came and that caused a schism amongst their people, that they were already kind of not really looking to sort of explore the stars.
Yeah.
Not really looking. And I think that kind of set a good... Like, it makes sense to what happened that they weren't expecting to meet people. They weren't trying to meet people. So someone coming in, it's like it was very easy for the fears to get stoked up amongst
them. Yeah, you can be technologically advanced but still sort of isolationist, I suppose. Yeah.
I mean, look, I can't think of any allegory within our planet, obviously, but, you know, it's like sometimes I guess some people just want to hate people coming from the outside. I don't know. Can't think of anyone.
And so we get the start of the fight between Gwyn and Horsensia, which involves going down on this big sort of platform that goes down and down and down and down and down. And then they have to climb up using the what they call the is it the ancestor they call it? Oh, I forget what they call it.
It's the thing like that me and Elliot were talking about.
Yeah, we were convinced it was a captured changeling in season one, but that was one of our theories that didn't pan out.
The weapon. Heirloom.
Yeah, heirloom, that's it. But this leads to a shot where Gwyn's sort of hanging off it with both hands, and it's very much Obi-Wan Kenobi in The Phantom Menace, where Darth Maul's slashing at him with the... I think the framing of the shot, to me, was very deliberately evocative of that.
Well, perhaps we've actually got Star Trek fans who do like Star Wars.
Perhaps we have. So back in the future then, the main gang gets put in prison with Chakotay, and this is scuppering the plan a little bit because they were meant to stay away for 4 hours to let him launch the protostar, but instead they get put in jail with him. And this leads to Majel, which that's a great, like, let's name the Vulcan after Majel Barrett. That's brilliant.
Yeah.
But she does the classic, I'll tie something round my ears so they can't tell I'm a Vulcan.
Star Trek vocal back.
But it's like all of it, they're so clumsy with the things they're saying and trying to hide it. And like, as crap as Chakotay is, he must realise there's something dodgy about them.
You'd think so, because Dal's just like, ooh, Starfleet, what's that? Federation, what's that?
Never heard of that.
I do really enjoy...
Was that it? Was it tricorder, you say?
Yeah, he over-eggs the pudding a little bit, doesn't he? But I really enjoy Jankum in these scenes with all his bird puns for Chakotay's officer that's a bird. Like, I can't remember what all of them were, but it's the more you rewatch that scene, the more you notice that he's dropping them in constantly.
And he keeps going to himself, don't do it, don't do it. He can't help himself because of the nature of him.
It's so nice.
Then at one point,
everything to be more civil and more polite, and kind of he's got his hair slicked back and everything, and just he can't help but walk into. And it, the one I want to bring up though, the last one, I can't remember what it was, but Chakotay goes, "Well, you got to admit that one's quite good." It's like no better than the rest, really.
I mean, yeah, I
wanted a special one if he's going to say that.
I think clearly Chakotay is a bird racist and has always had a problem with his first officer being a bird and has just been waiting for someone else to do it so that he can go, that one was pretty good.
In all fairness, you two have always found him quite foul.
So, you know. Indeed, you see, there you go. Chakotay would be like, that was a good one, Dr. Squee. Well done.
And I'm like, no, no one laughed.
And then this leads us into, is it a predestination paradox? Because was it them being there that meant that they could try and escape? Yeah, so on one level, it's like, yeah, you might be right. On the other level, you could just be justifying yourselves getting involved when you shouldn't be doing. So it's a bit of a gamble.
I just love it. I just love the fact that they're bring in already this far in, we've already got a couple of kind of theories of time travel which come up, and now predestination paradox.
Yeah,
this is just so much fun. Like, and won't tell you what happens, but they do discuss other ones, I think, within the first six. Anyway,
cool.
But like, I won't say any of the details anyway. But it's like, I love how much, like, if you really like what I think Star Trek, Doctor Who, all these shows are really clever at doing is like backdoor teaching you science stuff, just like,
definitely. It's
like, I learned linear. The word linear, I literally learned from Deep Space Nine, linear time.
Oh, yeah. And like I remember
Doctor Who, and you know, this has got all these kind of real theories of time travel, and it's just great.
Yeah. Like, I remember meeting people as an adult who didn't know what multiverses were until the Marvel films, and it's like, how can you not? Have you not seen Star Trek? Have you not seen Red Dwarf? Like, I just couldn't wrap my head around. Like, I just assumed that's normal knowledge that everyone has.
I think the problem is that we assume everyone's as cool as us.
That's the problem, yeah.
Well, it just made me so happy when I first started watching these programs about, like, real theories of time travel, Neil deGrasse Tyson and, I think it's Michiko something. It's a Asian astrophysicist. They both talk a lot about, I can never remember his name, but they talk a lot about theories of time travel and stuff. And it's like, I was like, oh, that I've heard that one. I'd heard of most of them from sci-fi, apart from the ones which were too boring to work in sci-fi because they involve stuff.
Yeah, of course.
Just wouldn't
be
practical for a sci-fi show. It's great though.
And we get, like, the reference as well, like, well, it won't be the first time. There was the Bell riots and there was the first warp flight, which is really nice that they throw them out there.
They are referencing things that have happened.
Although,
happened in Star Trek anyway.
Well, that's the thing. I thought they were meant to kind of keep those things top secret. They did that. They all go in the file. Because it's not the first time someone brought up First Contact. I think it was 7 of 9, but...
Yeah, that's been brought up a couple of times.
And to be fair, neither of those were predestination paradoxes. They were things that they had to fix when something went wrong.
I think in the way she words, it was kind of clever because it was like, it's not the first time that Starfleet's been involved in...
Yeah,
I think the devil was in the detail of how she worded it, because I thought the same thing. But
the predestination paradox is probably the city on the edge of forever, where Edith wouldn't have crossed the road to get killed if Kirk wasn't there.
No, that's a good point. Yeah,
so that's probably a predestination paradox.
Yes, yeah, it probably is. And then, yeah, this is where Jankum uses his hand, as we talked about,
because you've got the bird officer going to him, you can't do anything with the tricorder, and he's going, Jankum can. Jankum can do it.
Thanks to differ.
Yeah.
I love it when Jankum gets, like, really happy about something. He's just, they're all just such great characters, but it's so joyful.
It is, yeah. And then during the escape, Chakotay actually sees the tricorder and he's like, wait a minute, why have you got a tricorder? And they're like, hey, fine, you go that way.
What, you mean he finally twigged that they might actually be Starfleet or something when they're going, Starfleet, what's that? Never heard of it.
Although, again...
Yeah, he kind of worked it out, finally.
I still find it really jarring, like, some of the kind of... when they've got humans on screen talking, when you've got all the aliens, which they seem to just move more naturally. Like, when Chakotay's talking, it's very square. It seems men...
I think it's... It's stylized, isn't it? And the alien designs fit that style much better than the human ones do.
The aliens look really smooth and flowing, but humans look very chunky and squared on
It's an articulation when they're speaking as well. Like, Jacoba's mouth doesn't move enough. Like, I just, if they do get a third series, and I know we're all hoping.
I'll tell you what.
I hope they do. Like, that would be one thing I'd say to work on, but like, the animation.
I mean, one thing they got really right, and like people talk about, like with CGI animation, you've got the uncanny valley, but Chakotay's always been dead behind the eyes, so it doesn't matter how badly you animate his eyes, it doesn't rob anything from the performance. Anyway, okay, I'll stop.
Do not lie.
Yeah, that's like when I say, oh, no, that's my last pun, that's my last pun, I promise. We all know it's not true. Come on.
And then Dal distracts the robots by saying, look how distracting I am.
Which is a brilliant way to get the attention.
It is. And that lets Chakotay get away. But Dal drops a disruptor. Chakotay picks up the disruptor. And that makes all the difference and means they can escape on the ship this time.
Yeah, which they shouldn't have.
Which is where we cut back to Gwyn, and we find that Gwyn starts sort of temporal phasing, I want to say.
Yeah, I think that's a good...
Can't grab the thing.
I do think we've seen this before, temporal phasing.
I'm sure we have. Yeah, we must have done at some point.
Sure. I mean, I thought it was really... like really cool that they thought of the idea, which I can't remember them using before, of because they're in the other time zone, which has caused the paradox. It does make sense that she'd phase between those two times, because that's where the thing that's linked. It's kind of like, it's sort of like it makes enough sense that you can because do it. Like, but
they can still be there, but she, because they'd been born from wherever they came from.
Yeah,
but she wouldn't have been. Because the Diviner won't have gone or any of that.
She's basically getting Marty McFly, didn't she? She's starting to disappear.
Yeah. But appearing to them, I thought, was a really nice touch, a really good kind of book.
But the nice thing is that they haven't made her get off with her dad to save it.
Yet. We've not seen the end of the season yet. Though hopefully that's not the way it goes.
I'm shipping them.
I think everyone is out there at this stage. Because Dal's all, she's not my girlfriend. It's like, she totally is. Anyway, Temporal Mechanics 101 then. And I noticed this on second watch. The episode opens with Murph hanging about in Stellar Cartography. And we don't really see what he's up to. And that'll come back during the last shot of the episode, which we'll talk about. But it's nice that they've got what seems a completely innocuous detail the first time round. We're going to revisit and we're going to pay that off later in the episode. And then we do get the classic technobabble. Like, we talked about it a little bit last week, like where we talked about how... when the Borg sphere in First Contact went back in time and the Enterprise got caught in its wake. So that was why they survived the change. And we get something similar here, like, well, you know, the Infinity went through the wormhole and it's got temporal shield. So maybe that's protecting us as well.
I mean, I would say they probably over the series pushed that as far as, you know, maybe a little beyond what you might do in a regular... I think this is a family animation, so it kind of it fits.
I think they're pushing it and they're going to get away with it because of what the show is, the audience is aimed at.
And it's such a great show as well. Like, I don't mind a bit of artistic license, especially in an animated show.
That's wrong. I'll take that back. Not the audience it's made for. This is a show made for kids, but it is also aimed at adults because you can watch it as a family show.
Yeah.
We're just watching it and enjoying the hell out of it. So yeah, it is made for everyone, but it's made a bit simpler, so it's more accessible for a younger audience.
Oh, and apparently Willow says it's also made for dogs.
Of course. And lest we're accused of recency bias, we picked up the animated series episode yesteryear for not playing the time travel rules properly either. So
yeah,
this is not us being forgiving of new Trek. We tend to pick up on these things generally.
Like, let's and be fair.
We said it was the same reason then as well, because it was an animated show.
Can I just also say, though, that season two of Prodigy is arguably a continuation of Star Trek Voyager. Continuation.
Yeah,
and Star Trek Voyager did not play well with time travel because it was always reset at the end of the episode.
It was.
So Star Trek Voyager isn't the best at time travel.
Mm. No, I'd say this is a great 50-50 split between a sequel to Voyager. Well, probably 70-30 towards a new show.
Yeah.
To Voyager. And I think they've threaded that needle really greatly. So, like, anyone who doesn't know Voyager, and surely they'll go back and watch off the back of this, but anyone who doesn't can still follow this perfectly.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Then they manage to communicate, and I like how Majelle sort of dobs them in a bit here, where they're saying, well, we're not sure why, and she says, like, due to their reckless actions, we...
can we also throw out when she earlier on goes to Delka, and he goes, no, I'm not really part of the group. I'm more a captain. She goes, well, he thinks he's a captain, but he's not really. She goes, what? Vulcans can't lie. Sassing him really perfectly.
And then we start getting these mysterious messages, first of all, to save Gwyn. And so, Dr. Squee, you will have to bite your tongue because you most likely know who these are coming from.
Well, the thing is, we saw this in the second episode. We saw this, like, glowing spaceship appear, didn't we?
Hmm.
That told them don't go through the wormhole. And I'm assuming it's coming from there. That's now trying to put things right.
But who is it?
Well, like, my first guess was it was sort of a magician, because I thought, like, the colour palette and the circular thing looked very much like, oh, what's his name?
Zero.
Zero. I thought it was giving them sort of vibes.
Yeah,
but I'm not sure if it is that.
I will say my theories when I was first watching was either that or a future version of them somehow. Like, yeah, that was where I was going.
Yeah,
Magician, like, from what I've seen of it, on the first two episodes, I'd go with Magician. I'm not sure where I'd go now. Like,
and at any point have we considered Iconians? Because we've always got to consider Iconians when it's a mysterious.
We haven't, and I didn't on this, and I'm really sorry. I feel like I've actually
let the side. Iconians this time.
I feel like I've let the side down.
As long as one of us thought of the Iconians, it's all right.
Or it could be Worf, because last time we had someone sending mysterious transmissions to a character, it turned out to be Worf in Picard.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's kind of funny because I don't think they've compared notes or anything. I think there's probably someone up high who made sure they don't tread too much ground. Like, but the similar kind of threads which have been trod by this and Picard were kind of funny.
I do.
And like with season one of Prodigy, had the interconnected ships, which we also got in Lower Decks, and then we got in Picard. So they had that idea.
Yeah, it's time they did away with that idea. I think Picard did away with that at the end, didn't he?
Yeah, I think
good idea.
We've tried it three times.
Shame on us.
We've nearly been wiped out three times. Let's not do this ever anymore.
Do you reckon that's like the janitor at Paramount who just wanders in and out of all the writers' rooms and just goes, hey, you know what would be an idea if they linked all the ships? You go, oh, that's great. Well done.
Oh, by the way, when I was rewatching that episode of Prodigy, I think I said at the time that why is the slowest acting weapon? Like, it goes to all these ships, but it takes ages to take out any ships. But
yeah,
watching it back, they did say it's like it was hastily put together. It was their one shot. Like, for everything that it does, you would understand why it maybe wasn't the most powerful necessarily. Like, it could have been basically a bug that didn't make it kind of blow them up just with one shot. Or they just wanted them to read under each other.
It had him on a low phaser setting instead of the the high phaser setting.
Either that, or if you've got more of them before they blow up, damaging each other as well. Then yeah, maybe so. It's either one of those two makes sense.
Maybe he didn't understand phaser settings. Maybe he didn't understand phaser settings, so they've all been set.
Yeah,
fire phasers, and just at whatever setting they already were at, instead of moving them all to high setting.
Exactly. So it's one of two, or like, you know, it's like with these the best kind of bugs, like COVID, for instance, don't kind of get it. They start off really strong and then they actually get weaker because the weaker ones survive longer to spread further. So maybe it was so to make sure they got all the ships. So it's probably a bit of a. So there you go.
So they follow these coordinates and they end up in the hole that Gwyn was in, doing the full Rowlery or whatever it was called. And I really actually like this idea, and I'm sure we must have done this before, like in Time's Arrow, for example, but having parallel action taking place in the same point in space but at different points in time. And then that means that we can mount a rescue because we're in the right place. We're just not in the right time to rescue her.
Can I also ask a question? Like, what do you think, guys think? When she, like, drops to the floor and the kind of, like, the heirloom material catches her? Because they said this is an ancient rite. It happens all the time. Like, only one comes out the victor. So, basically, that means this thing has, whatever entity it is at the heart of this planet, has decided to save her. Which is kind of interesting. I wonder if, like,
interesting.
I was thinking, it's like, is it because it sensed that she was so important? Like, maybe it's a force which is out of time itself.
Well, it's maybe sensed that actually this has happened, so you've been affected by this time thing, but it maybe knows that she's the one who's right, that you're the
one. Yeah, maybe it knew. Yeah. It knew she didn't lose fairly, so it was like, right. Or maybe it just absconds with everyone who falls down. It's got a massive big civilization below the surface.
Right, I've got to get to the planet. She opens the door. It's like, everyone goes, hello! Like,
so I too lost the thing. And
Yeah, we would have gone up like to the planet ourselves, but we were too embarrassed, to be frank.
Like Sacha Baron Cohen film, The Dictator, where he keeps like going like that to have people killed, and they're like, no, we can't kill everybody who he says to kill, so they just send him off and have him like put a fake mustache on and come back, sort of. Maybe it's that going on. Nobody actually dies during this ritual, they just think they do. So we're talking about, like, how are we going to rescue her? And Dal gets a great line where he's like, can someone translate the nerd speak? Which is a nice sort of nod to the fact that, they do throw technobabble in there now and again. And they do, at this point, reference Worf in parallels. Like, they talk about, well, Worf did this thing where he went to all these different universes and blah, blah, blah. So I like that they're getting another reference. So that's that. We've referenced DS9, we've referenced TNG, obviously we've referenced Voyager. And then you get the Temporal Mechanics 101 video, which I think it reminds me of like Jurassic Park, where it's Mr. DNA and he explains.
That's funny, because I thought of the TVA in Marvel.
I got that as well. I think I got both of them from it. But I thought this was a really good way for the audience you're aiming at, and even for the older audience, because when you start going in time once and we've had it and you try to explain to each other what they're on about, and I thought that with the dominoes was brilliant, how time moves back like this. But if you move a domino, this one doesn't fall, and we have to do something to make it fall again.
And I just thought, I mean, Jim's kind of like like what I was thinking kind of out of the water, because I was thinking, it's like, oh yeah, if it wasn't for just a couple of years, like you would have beaten, like Marvel beat you to it. But like you say, it was in Jurassic Park. It actually goes right back to there. So nothing new under the sun, as they say.
Yeah.
To Elliot's point there, like there was a story when Steven Spielberg was making Jurassic Park, and they were all scratching their heads, like, you know, this is quite complex stuff. How do we explain it? And Spielberg said, well, why don't we have them all watch a video that explains it? And the other people were like, you can't do that in the middle of a film. And like, why not? Else you can.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's also when they do the like, so you think we're building a time travel ship?
Yeah,
like, I cannot express this enough. Don't. It'll give you a massive pain. Like, are you sure you want to? Really?
But if you absolutely must.
Yeah, we'll still show you how to do it.
Yeah.
And the time machine, well, the Infinity rejigged as a time machine. It kind of reminded me of the hovercrafts in The Matrix.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially with it being down a big hole. Like,
yeah, and the bits coming off it. Yeah, I got Matrix vibes off that.
Yeah, I thought visually it really reminded me of them. But this allows them to travel back and find Gwyn. But they now need to get off the planet, because they're now, and I think this is a really neat way of getting them back into the timeline of the rest of the show, rather than going, we've got to go through the wormhole. It's like, no, you're literally in the same place, so all you have to do...
time now already.
Yeah, so all you have to do is get off planet. You don't have to go back the way you came.
I do like for making it work, and you've got Jankum and he's putting together a time machine. And it's sort of like, and they try moving and it won't work, and being attacked. And he just hits it with his spanner to make it work.
Oh, percussive maintenance. Yeah. And hair, and the way his hair goes at that moment as well. It's like, oh, classic Jenkins back. Like, I love the fact that he kind of brushed it back and everything, but I kind of wanted it to go back to the original look.
I thought there was some nice touches when they do start moving in time, because they're just about to get attacked. And this, again, it's all Matrix where you've got the robots outside starting to cut them apart.
Yeah, it is.
And they've gone through one of them gets through the window on the front view, whatever it is. And it's just about to stab Dal as it starts. And it's a lovely bit of rewinding glass going back into place.
Yeah, that's really good. And, so this is where whoever the mysterious benefactor is.
Right. If you were watching it, because I'm only up 6, so I've got a new feeling now. But at the point of episode 4, who would you think it is?
I'll tell you. Who I thought it might be and really wanted it to be, but I think is extremely unlikely. In the New Frontier books by Peter David, there's an ongoing story arc where there's a mysterious alien that keeps upgrading ships and upgrading people's DNA, and they keep abducting people and upgrading them. And it went on for about 4 of his novels and also a comic book series. And then it was that long before he wrote the next book that he clearly decided he was bored with idea. So he just sort of went, all right, well, this species, but this other species has killed them all. So now these are the new baddies. So I was hoping they were picking up that thread and we're going to... My entire thing with Star Trek is I want New Frontier to be canon. I want to see Mackenzie Calhoun in...
I thought you were going to say Calhoun, because I know I know that name mainly from you.
It's straight away the time traveler from Enterprise that we see right at the beginning talking to Archer, who's directed all the time stuff.
Well, that's jumping to the end of this episode, so we see Murph talking to someone who could well be future guy, as they called it.
Now,
I was just talking about the fact that they upgrade the ship gets fixed out of nowhere.
Well, that's sort of like their mysterious benefactors. And
well, exactly, yeah.
Which I think is now all the same.
Yes, I think so.
Same person.
So go on, who did you think it was? So do you...
Now, I was thinking Future Guy, who, there's two theories on this. Mm-hmm. That one, it's Archie from the future, which was never revealed in Enterprise, but it would have been in season 5.
Mm-hmm.
Or it could be Daniels, which means we're getting, what's his name?
David Cronenberg again.
Cronenberg back.
Well, the OG. Yes,
slowly, Daniels is becoming the most important character in Star Trek, as predicted by the quiz at Destination Trek last year.
Oh, my God. If the quiz isn't all about Daniels this year, I will be sorely disappointed.
About Daniels last year, but...
Sorry, go on, me.
I was just going to say, it wasn't all about Daniels. It was disproportionately about Daniels.
Yeah, about 75%.
Anyway.
Well, I wanted to be Daniels. About the David Cronenberg version.
Yeah.
What's his name?
Kovic.
Well, I wanted to be a Kovic quiz this year. He's like bringing it up to date with his favourite character. I must admit, my thought at this stage was that it was probably the same person sending the messages, I thought, was in the thing.
Yeah.
It was like, again, Medusans or a future version of them was still where I was kind of stuck at this stage. Well, but I just love the idea. Guys,
so I like either Archer or Cronenberg.
And I like the fact that they had Murph being the one. It kind of reminds me of like in the horror films where they get the child to be the one who's communicated with from the other side.
Yes. Much
had those kind of vibes where Murph is the eternal child. Yeah, it's really great. But also we did the pew-pew.
Any other theories then on who the benefactor might be? Well, obviously, we can't say what we know now.
At the point of episode 4 is what I'm basing this on.
Right. Well, if we're pretending that we're covering these in real time, I'm really excited because next week we're going to see the aliens out of New Frontier and we might get a cameo from Captain Calhoun.
Or the Medusan. Seeing the race with Heroes films, which, by the way, I meant to bring up just as a random kind of thing. He does in this episode. He doesn't quite a lot. In the first series, did Zero do the, like, because I love it, but he goes like, yippee and woohoo. He's got these kind of little woohoo tips.
I seem to remember a little bit of that.
Yeah,
I didn't even know from a rewatch, but I'm noticing it. Maybe not this series.
But then they did get the suit upgraded at the end, so maybe you couldn't do all the jumping about being...
It's really nice. I think it's a really nice little character thing because he's...
For most of the first season, he was in like his jump put together uniform, wasn't he?
Mm.
Yeah. I just where he's kind of like I said last week, he's kind of like the grown up in the room a lot of the time. He talks a bit more sensibly and a bit more measured and everything. So when he kind of gets joy from just goes, yippee, it's just really nice. It's just, I like the kind of contradiction of it that it shows he's just as excited as the rest of them. He's just a bit more logical sometimes. So him sparring off the Vulcan as well, it's love the kind of little floating between them. I love it.
Seems to be a bit of romance brew, or certainly bonding going on, whether it's romantic or not.
She says, oh, I think you're the most logical amongst them. And he's like, oh, yeah, you logical also, yes.
Yeah.
Right.
Just on the subject of Zero getting a new costume, they've all got the new uniforms. Murph's evolved. Now, a savvy marketing company could have released one load of action figures where they looked like they do in season 1 and then got us to buy them all again by making them look like they do in season 2, and we've got a new ship, the Infinity and the Voyager, that we could buy big models of to play with. Yeah, it's almost like this show was a gold mine for merchandising.
The kids never tapped in on.
Exactly.
Probably they didn't sell merchandising rights with the show, I'm guessing, to Netflix. I'm guessing they sold the show.
No, but they didn't even do it in season 1. When you're doing the kids' show, you should also be thinking about Merc. He-Man, Merc, Turtles, Merc. And it was, all these shows were all about the Merc.
And there needs to be no delay. You need to... If the kids see the cartoon on Saturday morning, they need to be able to buy it from a shop Saturday afternoon.
Oh, yeah. I mean, all I meant was, I'm just wondering if now they have sort of sold to Netflix, even if it gets a third series. I'm just wondering if, like, how to put it, how motivated Star Trek will be to release the merchandise if they didn't sell it.
No, possibly not. I mean,
I hope they are. I hope they still want to make money off the back.
The thing is, Lucas, we go back to Star Wars again, but George Lucas proved that the money is in the merch, not in the actual show.
Of course.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And that's the whole thing with having a kids show. You don't need to be having billions of viewers. You don't need huge adverts coming on because it's for kids. Because the kids have got the parents going out and spending hundreds on all the toys to want to go with the show that they're watching. And that's what shows do to make money. And that's why certain kids shows carry on for years and years and years and years and years, because the merchandise is there.
Exactly. It's like, we need to introduce at least one new character per episode so that we can get action figures of them all out.
Oh, even the Vulcan character, like, as much as it's also kind of Majel is also forwarding the story very well and fits very nicely. It kind of feels like this is your new action figure right here.
Pokemon came with games and merc and all sorts, and Yu-Gi-Oh! it came with a game, but it's up there for merc.
And to be fair, Pokemon weren't messing about. They're like, how many have them of 100? That's just the first game. Don't worry, there'll be 100 more next year.
And what's the catchphrase? You've got to collect them all.
Exactly. They had it sussed out. But in the defense of the merchandising team, Playmates Toys did release one series of Prodigy figures. It was all of the main cast except for Rock, because they didn't want to spend money on making a bigger mold. And they didn't release them anywhere except the USA that I'm aware of, because you definitely couldn't get them in England. And now either those merchandising rights have lapsed or Playmates have chosen not to renew it. So there is currently not a manufacturing company that makes Star Trek action figures, which is just poor.
Mental.
I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Anyway,
just away money as far as I'm concerned. I also just want to quickly address something really cool. I have seen the fan reaction to season two. Seems even bigger than I noticed for season one, which is really hopeful. Kind of, it just, everyone seems to want more of this. It's just a great first indicator. We don't know what the figures are like, but if I'm seeing more comments, and you know, the three of us are on every Star Trek group and everything, and I don't have to avoid anything because I've seen them all. It's promising is all I'm saying. And like, even people are saying, it's like, I've seen several comments going, it's like, oh, I dismissed it after watching the first couple. I thought it was a kid's show.
Yeah.
Whereas I've gone back and watched now and I love it. Like, even people haven't watched
it. Where it does in the charts on Netflix, isn't it? That's going to be the big determining factor.
Yeah.
It's very weird metrics that Netflix have. And there is,
well, metrics say shows aren't popular when you have 90 million viewers.
But this is the thing, because there's a thing about how likely a show is to draw in new subscribers. And it peaks at around season two. Even if a show's popular, season three doesn't tend to get as many new subscribers. It might get existing subscribers watching it. And so from that metric, unfortunately, I think Netflix are probably going to be happy with two seasons of it for people to watch. But if it is a mega hit, and I think the creators have said this, then there is a chance, but we shall see.
I will say the kind of like thing in the plus column is that after they had already released the first season after buying both, they did a great it was front and center when they released season two.
Yeah,
like,
definitely.
Some shows don't get that treatment if the first hasn't gone down that well. Like, I've noticed some things have just appeared on Netflix, but I haven't noticed in the big banner at the top. It wasn't the big banner for like a good week there. So I think that's it's all promising signs. We don't know.
It is. But it's good to see.
Yeah.
Anyway, we'll wrap up there then for this week, but we will be back next week to talk about the next two episodes of Prodigy. In the meantime,
I can't remember the names.
I can't either. In the meantime, you can get in touch with us. We're at RetrekPod on X. We're RetrekPod@gmail.com. We're on Retrek Model Studios on YouTube.
I am working on getting a video together, but as we said at the start of the show, I had so much on over last week. Yeah.
It has been a crazy week.
It's been a massively crazy week.
Dr. Squee, what have we got with the Dr. Squee show?
Well, equally, without even purchasing a house, it's been a busy last week where I was working the lakes and everything. Friday was meant to be my day to get some stuff, and I just felt sick after being awake for way too many hours. So it's still the Sarah Pimpera interview is going to go out this week, and I'm going to get the interview I did with Ian Cheston, William Russell from Doctor Who, the original companion who passed away about a month ago now. Those are coming up this next week. So,
and for anyone who's not aware, we are going to be bringing our show When Trek Goes Wrong at the Movies to Destination Trek in Blackpool in a couple of weeks' time.
Which is great. Anyone who hasn't seen it, we've only done it once, but if you've seen it, you'll know how fun it is. If you've not seen it, come watch it. If you're Destination Trek, we are doing this from a position where we love Trek, as you can probably tell what we do every week, but this is all great fun. And you absolutely maybe won't be watching what you think you're watching at the start.
I'll even say, if you saw it last time as well, we're it's always slightly different. It's always kind of good fun. It's just like,
yeah, it's there's very no
script or anything. So yeah, come, you will find a different experience, I'm sure.
And yeah. In the meantime, then, let's hope the week until we're back, go fast.
Go fast.
Go fast.
And thanks for trekking with us this time. We will see you next time on the Retrek.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Trek on LLAP.